NYU Stern introduced significant change last year. Two new MBA programs, changes to the application process. Let's catch up with Associate Dean Easter Gallagly and get the scoop on what's happening for the upcoming application cycle. Welcome to the 275th episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" Not only in, but in at the best program for you. Before I dive into today's interview, I want to mention that today's episode is sponsored by Accepted's Guide, 5 Fatal Flaws to Avoid in Your MBA Essays. This free download will help you avoid the most common mistakes that applicants make with their application essays. Download your free copy at accepted.com/275download. Again, you can get your free copy at accepted.com/275download. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to Admission Straight Talk, Easter Gallagly, Associate Dean of MBA Admissions at NYU Stern School of Business. Now, Easter needs no introduction at Accepted. He's participated in the past in many of Accepted's old text-only admissions chats. He's also been a guest on Admission Straight Talk before. During his last interview, which was accepted.com/212, we discussed several innovations that Stern introduced last year. That's the 2017-18 application cycle. We'll see how these developments have evolved since then and take a look at this year's MBA application, as well as the why behind a lot of the elements in the application. We're also going to link from the show notes at accepted.com/275 to last year's show, because I think the two shows are really very much related. So if you like last year's show, you definitely want this year's show. And if you listen to this year's show and like it, I think you'll also enjoy last year's show. Again, that's accepted.com/212. Easter, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Very nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great. Delighted to have you. Now, let's start with the basics, since I'm going to assume that some are not going to listen to me and go listen to the other interview first. Can you give me a brief overview of the full-time MBA options at Stern, focusing on the differentiators that Stern offers?
Absolutely. On the full-time MBA side, we also have obviously have a part-time MBA and executive MBA. But on the full-time MBA side, we have the two-year full-time MBA program. We've had that for quite some time. We also have two new programs, which are pretty innovative. We have their one-year MBAs, but they're specialized in terms of what they focus on. One focuses on technology, and the other focuses on the business of fashion and luxury. So the two-year program is a fall, a spring, summer internship, followed by a fall and spring. The two one-year programs are essentially three semesters. They begin in May, so they're summer, fall, spring.
Got it.
So the two-year program is about 60 credits. The one-year programs are about 51 credits. So you do get the lion's share of what you would get from a credit standpoint, semester standpoint, all packed into a 12-month format in those two specialized programs. In terms of the two-year program, what I think differentiates us from a lot of other schools are really two things. The first is obviously our location in New York City, but more importantly, how we leverage it. And what I mean by that is the experiential learnings that we offer. We have a tremendous amount of partnerships with organizations, companies throughout the New York area, where we can basically augment your learning in the classroom with real situations. Many of these are actually for credit, some are not, but we have a tremendous amount of opportunities, and it's basically unparalleled. You're not going to find a better sort of hands-on complement to your school learning than you can through NYU and how we leverage New York to your advantage. And the second thing I would say is, and this is a surprise to some people who aren't as familiar with NYU Stern, is the community. We are very, we're a medium-sized school. We're very supportive. It's kind of like having a small village, you know, of support in the opportunities of the big city and all that presents. And I think the reason that our students are so supportive and helpful for each other is one of our big differentiators, which we term as IQ plus EQ, that combination of raw intellectual capability mixed with emotional intelligence. That's the EQ part, which really helps them be good leaders, good teammates, understand how to manage things through people, not just pure analysis of numbers. So I think ultimately when you're talking about our MBA programs, what really sets us apart is sort of the innovative nature of them, the experiential learning, and the student base, which has that IQ plus EQ.
Okay, great. Thank you. How have the luxury and fashion goods program and the Andrew Ku Tech MBA both evolved. So I think last year you were just admitting the first classes. I guess they've already started. What's developed? How is the toddler learning how to walk?
Well, we launched them last year, and we went through our first admission process. We were hoping to have about 30 and 30 in the programs, and that's pretty much what we wound up with. We wanted a slightly few more in the tech than the fashion luxury, and that's about where we landed. We're about 30, 35 in tech and about 27 or so in fashion luxury. And these are all people who have a strong passion for or desire to be in those industries. I mean, they're really a single track path. If you know those are what you want to do, these programs are absolutely optimized for that result. And the people who've done it, I mean, they're all innovators. They're all wanting to be kind of the first to go through the program. So they're all pioneering in spirit. And they started in May, and they've had a very intense summer. They've done a tremendous amount of things, a lot of experiential learning projects, and they're loving it. They're doing great. Everything seems to be running very smoothly. They seem extremely happy, and they're very tight-knit and close bunch. And we don't have a lot of major changes planned for year one because it's the first year of implementation. We want to basically see how it goes, make sure that everything's running smoothly and as expected, and obviously get as much learnings as we can if we want to make any tweaks or revisions going into the next cycle of the program. But right now we're primarily in an implementation of the plan and evaluating as we go. But so far, so good. I mean, people seem thrilled and very excited. In fact, during the week of orientation, we had our tech board, which is a veritable who's who in the tech space, including Andre Ku, who's donated to have the program named in his behalf. He was there, and we were hosted at IBM in the city. And we met with all the tech people. They were very excited about the incoming class and the profile. So we had this meeting with the tech board. And after that, all the students came in and they did a reception. And it was, I think, extremely exciting for the tech board and the students to be. And everybody was really thrilled with that opportunity. The tech students were certainly holding their own in the conversation. And the board was very pleased with the caliber and diversity of students that we had and their passion and experience and focus on tech. So, and it was a huge, huge win. And it was nice to see those kinds of things come together. So, like I said, it's been going great. On the fashion luxury side, during their orientation, they had this huge reception at an exclusive room over at LVMH, and that was a delightful affair as well. And I mean, it's been great. It's been really, really great. So, nothing but good reviews so far. And first year, we'll see how it goes. We'll make adjustments, and it'll keep getting better.
I'm sure. Okay, what's new at the 2-year full-time MBA?
Yeah, I mean, a full-time MBA program. I mean, the big news again last year was a lot of the launch of these new programs. There's always innovation that's going on. There's always new experiential projects and new courses coming down the pike and things like that. But I don't know that there's necessarily like a huge change or a big rollout this year on that program. We've done things like launch like our Fubon Center for Technology and Business Innovation, and that's a pretty big deal on the research side. It covers things like fintech and stuff along those lines, and people can read more about it. But it's really a center that focuses on technology, innovation, disruptive learning, and that's been a huge win for us. So I think in general, what we're seeing on the 2-year side is a continued move towards people who have a greater interest in technology and people who have a greater interest in strategy consulting than ever before. So we just continue to get more diverse, and that just keeps expanding. We're in our second year of the Fertitta military program as well. And we just had our most recent group of 20 some odd Fertitta military veterans start in July.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a special program that only we really have. And it's an amazing program for U.S. military veterans who are making the transition to business school. And it's a real differentiator for your listeners who are in that pool. We recognize at Stern that this is one of the most significant transitions that some of our students are making from the serving in the armed forces into the business world. The skills that they have are definitely transferable. They're extremely valued, more so than some military folk realize. But they don't necessarily have the sort of business vernacular, the landscape. And so there's quite an adjustment period that they need to have learning more about the careers and things like that. So we've established a program. It's called the Fertitta Program. We had a very nice donation to have the program named. And it's about a six-week program. It starts in early July, and it runs until August. It's for two-year MBAs. And it basically lets them start a little bit early. They do two courses. They do statistics and accounting. These are MBA-level courses. They're not sort of math camp. These are part of the curriculum, which enables the students to get an early start on two very important quantitative classes that are also sort of some of the basic language of business. And this is a huge advantage for them. They also get exposure to industries, knowledge on that side, the career side, acclimation to business school. So it's really great. Puts them on very firm footing, kind of an equalizer. And then one of the advantages is in the fall, they have one less class than the typical two-year MBA, which is incredibly important. Time is one of the most important assets you have during the business school experience. And basically, they've got more time to get involved in the classes, more time to get involved in the school, the extracurriculars, or in the job hunt, or some mix of all the three, which also enables them to be more and more successful. The military veterans who go through it love the program. We had amazing feedback out of the first year. The group coming in for the second year is really strong. We're one of the few business schools that actually report our percentage military. We're about 7% military, which is a very strong number.
Yeah.
And they're doing great and they're loving it. So they just started a little bit ago. So that's another thing that's a recent piece that's kind of, you know, we're hitting our second year there. So that's, you know, that's very exciting to see. So, yeah, I mean, just there's always new things happening for us and programs are evolving and changing continuously, but we don't sit still at Stern.
No. Okay. Let's focus a little bit on the application itself. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of applicants kind of miss the why behind the different elements in an MBA application. So I'm wondering if you can address the purpose. And I know that admissions offices are very purposeful in what they include in the applications. So what are you looking for? What is the why behind asking for a resume, the different essays? Specifically, you have the professional aspirations essay and the pick six essay, the EQ endorsement, and the interview. I mean, they each play a role, and I don't think they're all supposed to do the same thing. So what is the different function of each?
Correct. The application is to try and present a composite as to who you are.
Okay.
And it's to try and represent a composite as to who you are across what typically people would call three major dimensions. One would be you as a student, one would be you as a professional, and one would be you as a person. So it's really trying to kind of show those three major buckets of who you are. And certain parts of it do more in certain camps than others. And I always tell people, don't try and do everything about every part of who you are in one aspect, because it's simply not going to work that way. The great part is you don't have to do everything in one bucket, because you have many different things, and each of those things presents different aspects. So start off with academics. Some of the key pieces that you expect to see there, obviously, are your undergraduate transcript and results, your GPA, the coursework you've done, all that kind of stuff. There could be an additional graduate. There could be certifications, I mean, continuing education classes, and, of course, standardized tests in the mix as well. Most of that information gives us a sense of how you're going to do as a student. They're not everything, but that's primarily their role, and that's primarily what we're looking at out of those things. Some people, I think, tell the GMAT is kind of like make or break it, do or die, and ultimately, it really is just an indicator and one of many indicators of how you'll do in the classroom. Now, you need to be able to do well enough in the classroom to get through the program, so it's a starting point. So you need to prove that you can handle the coursework. But beyond that, it doesn't really tell you much about anything else. And I think sometimes people get a little overemphasized on that. It's just there to tell us, are you going to be okay as a student? Things like the resume, for example, are a really good baseline in terms of understanding someone's professional capabilities. Because it's basically kind of, you know, your track record as a professional. Where you've worked, what have you done, how have you been advanced, what have been your experiences to date, accomplishments, you know, progression and stuff like that. We also have a work history form, which is a really nice thing to sort of complement the resume. That has a little bit more detail in it, you know, kind of exactly when you started, exactly when you left, why. So you get to explain your transitions professionally in our work history form, which you don't really get to do on a resume. Most people typically don't on a resume say, I left this job to go get this job, and here's why.
Right.
That's not usually what's in a resume. But our work history form allows that kind of complimentary piece. And then from there, you can, and we have, you know, accomplishments, professionals and things like that in a form, you know, as well. So there's ways that you can kind of talk about some of the other accomplishments you've had professionally or even extracurricularly, achievements, awards, things like that, which also complement it. And then you kind of go into the essay. And in the essay, you're sort of talking a little bit about, particularly the essay one, which focuses on your professional aspirations. You know, where do I want to go? What have I done? How does an MBA fit into the plan, and an MBA at Stern in particular? And that's really where you tell us, you know, how an MBA fits into your professional plans. For some people, it's they feel like they've kind of gotten where they are in their fields. They want to get more information and knowledge in order to continue to progress. For other people, and so a large number of people, they want to transition. They want to move industries or functions or both. And they feel like the knowledge and the sort of connections that an MBA program can do are critical for making that transition. And we just need to hear about that and why. The nice part is that the essays work in tandem with the resumes and the work history forms. So you don't need to go through all the detail of your track record. We have a lot of the detail. This is to add some of the color that you don't have in a resume or work history form. So they understand kind of the overarching goal and the general through line and story that you have. So it's just a chance to tell us really what you want to do and why an MBA makes sense. And that helps us sort of put the pieces together. And then to kind of back that up a little bit more, you have some schools will have professional recommendations. In our case, we have EQ endorsements. They're basically statements about who you are. One is typically from your direct current supervisor, and one in our case can be from anyone else. And those speak to a variety of your personal characteristics, some of which speak to how you will do as a student, some of which speak to how you do as a professional, and some of you just speak to who you are and the character and nature of who you are as an individual who will be joining the community. So they kind of, depending on who they are, what they're talking about, they can cover any number of those things. And that, I think, helps to kind of, you know, flesh out your story. And then for us, we have a pick six essay, which is submitting six images with short captions, which try and capture who you are. So we've done a lot with numbers and scores and words and, you know, bullet points. And this is to try and bring things to life visually. So again, it really, you can actually sort of see the applicant. You can get a feel for them in ways that words and numbers maybe don't fully portray. And between all these things, you get a sense of who the person is. And it's up to the applicant to determine how to use it. They could focus primarily on things outside of work and school. They could focus on work. They could focus on school. They have a variety of things they can do with that. So they can be strategic about how they want to sort of, again, build out their full picture and composite. But it gives us a good sense as to who the individual is beyond the numbers and the words. And then, of course, most schools, and we're included, have an optional essay. So anything that people feel like isn't covered by all those elements, there's a chance to write in a little bit of information about that if there's something important that isn't covered. And for us, we'll read that application, we'll make assessments, and certain people will invite them to interview. And the interview will then go deeper into really most of those elements to sort of see, meet, and hear you in person. If there are pieces that we need to find out more information about, we will. If there are pieces we need to confirm, we will. But it's really a chance for us to get to know you deeper beyond that. And for us, our interview is pretty unique in that it's done almost exclusively in New York. We want you to come, see the campus, visit it, make sure it's right for you. We also want to meet you in person. Those, again, we've read the applications, so they're by interview invitation only. Almost all of them are conducted by admissions officers, trained assessors of talent, not alumni, not students. So people who fully read your application will have a deeper conversation, do this for a living, and it'll be a very productive use of your time. And you get to basically present your case in person to the admissions committee, and what could be better than that? So that's kind of how it all fits together, and hopefully that's helpful.
I think it was very helpful. Thank you. I mean, sure. I've frequently said that you have to look at the application like a jigsaw puzzle. And if you do it well, all the pieces fit together and create a portrait.
Yep.
With minimal overlap, just like, you know, pieces in a jigsaw puzzle fit together. They don't overlap. And
and I
Go ahead.
I agree, and I think it's actually a very interesting analogy because in some ways, Russell, if you're going to take it further, right?
Mm-hmm.
Often with the jigsaw puzzle, you begin with the corner pieces.
Right, the outside.
Right? That's,
I keep telling my grandchildren,
start with the outside.
Start with the outside.
Yeah, you start with those pieces that help sort of frame things.
Right.
So I would say something like an undergraduate transcript is in many ways kind of like a corner piece, right? It mm-hmm. starts to frame out who you are. It's very kind of clear. You know what that is. You know what it isn't. And it's a good starting point. And it's a good basis by which you can sort of discover more. And the same thing with like your prior test scores. Those are kind of like things that kind of help build the framework. And it gives you a sense as to generally where is this picture. And the pieces inside, this is where it can become a bit more nebulous. And the idea is you want those pieces on the inside to have a clear set of images and colors versus like a big blurry kind of thing where you don't know exactly how that's going to add to the element. So they should all really be adding to the visual. And the more that you think about those as pieces that need to clearly help add color, help add dimension, help add to the picture, the better, especially because they're pieces that fill out the middle, and that's really where the image comes to life.
Right.
So those pieces get a bit squishier, but they're critical to seeing who somebody is.
And to seeing the point of the puzzle. I mean, a lot of times the edges will be like the sky or the water or, you know, something that's
yep.
fairly undifferentiated. The differentiation
yep.
is usually in the middle.
Exactly. And for us, I would say that some of those pieces that really kind of fall in the middle, you're probably talking about, in our case, probably the interview and the pick six, I think in particular, are pieces that add a tremendous amount of sort of color and differentiation. So I would think that those are probably much more middle pieces in the equation.
Probably. And I was, as you were talking, I've never thought of it in terms of the corner pieces and the outside pieces. I've always just talked in general
mm-hmm.
about the puzzle, but I like this a lot. I would think the resume is if the corner pieces are the test scores or the transcript.
Resume is probably one of those edge pieces.
Exactly. Maybe not the corner,
mm-hmm.
but
yep.
on the edge, it's setting the framework. Right. So.
Absolutely. And even essay one, the goals essay something that could be an edge as well.
Maybe that first row inside, the second part
mm-hmm.
you go to, something like that. Could be, yeah.
Yep.
I can hear that very much. Now,
yeah, because some parts of it are some, yeah, it's kind of like some of them are like the basic facts. Maybe the work history form is maybe that, because it's more fact-based. But,
right.
but yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, no, we've definitely had this conversation with a friend of mine about admissions and definitely have talked about the jigsaw puzzle piece and kind of which pieces might be corners versus middles versus edges. And I think it's helpful to even further understand it. Yeah.
I think I mentioned on a recent podcast that we were on vacation with some of our kids and grandchildren, and we saw a puzzle that we purchased, and it was a really neat puzzle because the left side of the puzzle had fairly large pieces. And as you got
mm-hmm.
further on the right, they became much smaller, much mm-hmm. more intricate, and harder to place. So my
mm-hmm.
grandkids were able to do the left side of the puzzle. My kids, especially one son, is very into puzzles and very good at them. He was doing the harder pieces. And it,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are some pieces in an application or in one's life that are going to be very easy to place and highlight and figure out. And then there's those parts of one's life that maybe are a little bit messier or harder to explain or harder to fit in. Those are the right side. That's where,
mm-hmm.
as you say, the detail and the color is. But that's in addition to the outside part of it. But, I think it's a very good metaphor for the application
process. That's why the distinctive shapes of those pieces and
mm-hmm.
the colors of those pieces are so important.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because otherwise it's just a bit of a blur. And that's why you have to take even more time with those pieces to make sure they're as clear, that they're as edge-like as possible, considering they're in the middle.
Agreed.
You know, as defined.
Agreed. Last year, you allowed applicants, or Stern allowed applicants, I should say, to apply to more than one MBA program in the same application. They could choose the full-time MBA, two-year MBA, or they could choose the fashion and luxury MBA or the technology and entrepreneurship, the Andrew Koo Tech MBA. This year, they have to make a choice. Was there a reason that you changed that part of the application process?
Yeah, absolutely. In the first year of those programs, we didn't know what kind of overlap we might have, particularly with the full-time programs. Is somebody going to be, really committed to a 1 year in tech versus doing tech in the 2 year? Are they going to want to have multiple options? We didn't really want to restrict people, especially as the programs were new.
Mm-hmm.
And what we learned was that about 95% of people had one option, and that was their option, and they didn't want another option.
Okay.
So the bottom line is, it wasn't valuable for most people.
So why add the complexity?
Yeah, exactly. And confusion, and some people are gaming it. And what I will also say is that a lot of people who did put down a second option, it really wasn't, they really weren't interested in it. They just were listing something because they thought, well, maybe I should. It was very few people who actually really have a two-way go. And so we were asking everybody to think about this, everybody to fill it in. We had an essay around it. And it just wasn't adding a lot of value, to us as an admissions office, and certainly was creating more work for applicants. And, you know, for us, it doesn't take too long. You know, you try something. There was, I think, a very good reason why we did it in year one. We wanted to be safe. We wanted to be sure. We wanted to not restrict people. But with the learnings that we have, we feel like it's more a distraction and a hassle for people, and it's not adding value. So we eliminated it. So I think it's going to be great. I think people really can just choose their program and focus on it. And that's what they want to do anyway. So we're just letting them do what they want.
If an applicant applies to one of the three programs, and either after acceptance or even before hearing from you, rethinks and says, I really think the other one is better, can they approach you, or would you say wait till next?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, no, we have that happen all the time.
Okay.
There can be changes of life status. Like we've had people who, 2 year programs where they do and they get a new job or they get promoted or something, and they're like, I got a new position where I am. It's doing what I want to do. I still want the education, but I don't want to leave my job. Can I do part-time? We're like, yeah, we can work with you on that, evaluate you for that. So we always try and be flexible and work with people. Some things can be done. Some things can't be done logistically or just timing-wise. But we definitely, if there are good reasons why there would be a change, we are always open to listening to them and considering those cases. So definitely.
Now, last year, you had the EQ endorsement and two professional recommendations as part of your application. This year, it's just two EQ endorsements. How is the EQ endorsement different from a typical professional recommendation, and why did you make the change?
Sure. So the EQ endorsement is a new element that really only Stern has, which is really to try and have people speak to an applicant's EQ. For us, it's very important. And we want to get those measures, and we want to get as many indicators of that as possible. So why wouldn't we be doing that? Why wouldn't we be asking those questions, particularly of the third parties that people get to support their cases? We had set it up as kind of its own element because we figured a lot of people would want to maybe use someone outside of their typical professional world to speak to it. And what was interesting was we learned that we got good insight from it, so it helped us make better decisions. So it also prompted the question, well, if this information is valuable, why are we not asking it of everyone who's writing it on people's behalf?
Right.
And then the other thing that we learned is that for a lot of people, they actually wanted their EQ endorsement to also come from their manager because they felt like their manager would be in a great position to provide information on that. And so because it would be valuable for everyone to comment on it, we decided that everyone should. And because a number of people wanted their managers or supervisors to talk about it, we just decided, let's take the best of both worlds and morph them together. And that really gives us what we want. And it gives like a lot of nice options for the applicant. And it's a nice evolution. So again, we kind of, you implement something new, you have a thought as to what it may do or may not do. And some parts pan out, some things are a little different than what you expect. And you basically learn how to tweak it and optimize it over time. So I think this is going to work out better for the applicants and better for us. And I think it's a nice evolution of what's a great idea and definitely has a lot of value. And I also think it's a differentiator. I mean, it's one thing to say you value something. It's another thing to assess specifically for it. So,
right.
I think this ought to work out better.
Now, does the recommendation still allow the recommender to comment, let's say, on professional potential or how they handle conflict, or like I said, as part of EQ? or the more typical recommendation questions, for instance, those asked by the GMAC recommendation, or are you just doing more EQ-related questions in your rec?
Yeah, I mean, it basically has, it basically takes the recommendation questions and adds in the EQ question.
Got it.
So it really has both.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And just one last question on that. I mean, are you at all concerned that by basically asking the recommenders to do more work, it's going to discourage applications, or you just feel like it's a valuable differentiator and you're not going to worry about that?
It's really like, again, we're using kind of that base set of questions that most schools are asking these days.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one question beyond that.
Okay.
So it's not too bad on that front. And then, and one of the two can come from anyone. So
right.
I think one of the advantages with us is that in some places, both have to come from people in your professional world, and those can be harder to get. So for us, one of them could come from someone who's, you know, really almost anyone, and that would be a lot easier to get. So I think there's a trade-off. It might be a touch more work for your supervisor, but on the other side of the coin, there's a lot more people you can go to for the other one. So net-net, I don't think it's going to be a tremendous amount of extra burden.
Okay, no problem. And this Pick 6 essay was new for you last year. How did it work? Obviously, you liked it. It's back, but how did,
We loved it. I mean, I would say more than like it, we love it. The applicants love it. It gives us a lot of, it's amazing the kind of information it can provide and as quickly as what it does. So I think it did everything we were hoping it to do. It provided a consistent creative submission for people to express who they are as an individual. It allowed them to communicate not just with words, but with images, as we are basically communicating today as a society. We are not a word-only, essay-only society. We definitely use graphics and images. It lets them convey in a very short amount of time, in a very compelling and dramatic way, many aspects as to who they are, or go very deep into who they are, or some combination. So it gives a lot of latitude in terms of what you communicate, but a lot of structure in terms of how you communicate. So all the basic work on this is the thinking, not the writing and rewriting and formatting and reformatting. It's not about production value. It's not about edit. It's about thinking and then just doing. And so the people who've submitted it love doing it. We've gotten amazing feedback. They think it's one of the best essays that they filled out for any school. And for us reading it, it provides us with an awful lot of information very quickly in a very compelling fashion. You really get a feel for a person through this submission in ways that I don't think any other type of submission could possibly do, with the exception of an interview.
Picture's worth 1,000 words?
Yeah, and the nice part is this is a 6,000 plus word essay.
And you don't have to read it. And you don't have to read it.
No, you don't. It's amazing how much is conveyed. I mean, it's really amazing. And people are so savvy in terms of how they put these things together. And they can really have very different strategies depending on how they want to do it. I would say that the most conventional approach, and I'm not saying this is the way to do it, most people typically are covering several different aspects of who they are. And they, you know, sort of select an image for each sort of different aspect. You know, it could be sort of their family side, could be the professional side, could be some of their, you know, adventuring they do when they're not in the office or what have you. So, I mean, some people do that kind of thing, but other people really go deep into a specific dimension. Some people talk about maybe even their attributes, like their characteristics versus sort of their facts. I mean, it's fascinating, but yeah, it's great. And that, like I said, if you ever are doing an event, it's a wonderful thing to do with your friends, coworkers, colleagues. It's an amazing icebreaker. You have people put together their 6 pictures and put them up and you guess who's who, and you will learn something about people you even know very, very well.
I bet.
So it's been great. It's been great. I think this is, I think it's what they call them, like an instant new classic.
Yeah, right. New classic. That's an interesting term. But as I was preparing for the interview, I was just doing something with personal pictures last night, and I had the interview on my mind, and I was thinking, now if it were me, what 6 pictures would I pick? You know, that was actually, and it would have a lot to do with family. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's been in my office knows that there's a bulletin board, and the way to get on the bulletin board is to be with one of our grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it the pictures can be very, very revealing in terms of what's important to you. Now let's get away from pictures for a minute and get back to numbers. Stern just posted preliminary data for the class of 2020. That's the one that's going to be starting now or next week or next month, very, very soon. The average GMAT is 717. The 80th percentile range is 660 to 760. The 100% range is 590 to 780. 19% of students applied with a GRE only. Now, do you have any plans to post the GRE stats?
Not at this time.
Okay.
It's still the minority of the class. And when you're thinking about GRE test takers, again, some of them are coming from very different types of backgrounds and experiences. So, I mean, in particular, like you think about dual degree students who are pursuing other programs in addition to an MBA, which take the GRE instead of a GMAT. So I don't necessarily think that that base is as sort of generally representative as the overall class, because there's a lot of specific cases where people would be taking a GRE and it might present a skewed viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is, I mean, we're very transparent on things like the GMAT. I mean, there aren't that many schools that publish 100% ranges.
Right.
We're one of the few schools that does.
Well, you publish both, which I think is most useful.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you know, for transparency, it's pretty clear that we're transparent. I think the thing is we want to be transparent about things that we feel are helpful and valuable and not potentially misleading. And I think the GRE, again, given that you have a lot of dual degree students, which is atypical, and some people have very different backgrounds and those types of things, it's probably not as helpful as being able to look at the full GMAT range and the full and those kinds of things. And, you know, they're conversion tools, so you can always convert a GRE score to what it would generally be in the GMAT. So it's not that hard to get a sense as to what a competitive score might be if you're someone who is kind of like a more, you know, not like a dual degree type applicant. You're a more sort of traditional applicant applying, and you choose to use the GRE and the GMAT, which is totally fine with us. So if you want to get a sense as to what range might be good, you can always convert it over and take a look at that. But yeah, if you have people who are pursuing some very different programs, that it just doesn't always make sense. You know, like, I mean, take, for example, a program like our MBA MFA. You have people who, you know, are going to be directors and producers of films, and they're being evaluated at the Tisch School based upon their portfolio of creative work. A person in that space may or may not have sort of the same general GRE performance as people who, you know,
or an engineer,
are moving from consulting to finance or something like that, you know. So it can get very skewed. So you always have to look at it carefully. And I don't know that it would be the most helpful information for the general applicant pool, if that makes sense.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to the GMAT, right? I said the bottom number for the 80th percentile range was 660, which makes sense given your 717 average. And the bottom number period was 590. What does somebody outside the 80th percentile range, or even at the bottom of that 80th percentile range, have or do that makes you want to overlook what is definitely a low GMAT? I mean, there are other people that you rejected with higher scores.
I mean, well, the test score is just one data point, right?
Right.
And it just is an indicator of how you're going to do academically in your first year. Mm-hmm. Not even the whole program, but your core classes. And being a good student is a starting point, but it's not the be-all to end-all. And there's a lot more to it to be an MBA student. Now, some people may have a lower score, but they may have a whole host of other evidence that indicates that that score is probably not a full or accurate reflection of their capability as a student.
Or as a professional.
Or it basically says there are concerns of them as a student. And when you look at the rest of what they bring to bear, it's more than worth it to take that risk on them as a student. That you know that they're going to be adding so much more that you're okay with them being a little bit softer in that standpoint. And there's people on the other side of the house too, right? You got people who are that 780, but their work experience may be the equivalent of a 590.
Right.
You know, they're great academically, but their professional experience and accomplishments to date are on the lighter end. And again, you know that person's going to add a lot in the classroom. And on the career side, it's going to be a tougher road to go. But net, they're somebody that you want to have. So that's why, you know, all the schools say it's a holistic process. And you have to look at all the elements in connection with each other. You cannot look at them solely in isolation.
And that gets back to the jigsaw puzzle metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what the trade-offs would be on those types of things. So, and then some things are also, I mean, like when you look at like GPAs, I mean, GPAs are another thing where so much of it depends. I mean, we have military applicants and the military academies are not known for great inflation.
Right.
They're known to be very tough graders. There's some engineering programs that,
Berkeley,
you know, come to mind, mm-hmm, that are really, really tough on the grading. And so you also have to take those things into account, where if somebody in that kind of a program has a GPA that's maybe on the lower side of your distribution, you know that that's actually a GPA that's on the upside of your distribution because of its context.
Right.
So you really have to take a look at a lot of these pieces. With GMAT scores, you're looking at an overall score, but there's subparts, right? There's the quantitative mix, there's the verbal mix. You might have someone with a slightly softer GMAT score, but it might be because English is their second language. And while they do have a mastery of English, maybe that's holding them back a little bit on just that particular test score, and it's not fully reflective of their capabilities. You know, I mean, there's so many things. People who have immense creativity, they're not as quantitative, and they're planning to pursue fields that are not going to have anywhere near the amount of analysis because of the nature of the field and the nature of the functions. And so you want to make sure they're going to do okay in the kind of core classes they're going to take that are in that, you know, finance, accounting, and stats, things like that. And the majority of what they're going to do is not going to be in that space. So there's just so many trade-offs and so many individual cases. You know, people always tell me, well, if you had two people with the exact same this and the exact same that, I'm like, when I get two people with the exact same everything, like, I'll let you know. The closest I've had is identical twins. And they applied the same year. You know, they went to college together. They lived together. They've actually worked at the same company. Their GMAT and GPA scores were not the same. One had a high GMAT, one had a low GMAT, one had a high GPA, one had a low GPA. I mean, they wanted to go into two different fields. So the exact same wasn't the exact same. That's the closest I've ever gotten. And they weren't the exact same. Both were admitted because they were both great. But, you know, they really had different kind of pieces when you started to look at their jigsaw puzzle. So it's case by case. It's individual by individual. And there's a lot more to it than just the numbers, a lot more.
The twins, I mean, we know a couple of sets of identical twins, and they are not identical. They're very different personalities, very different, especially one set are their infants, so obviously I don't know them very well, but the other set is they're adults now. And even as young children, they had very distinct personalities. You couldn't tell them apart visually, but they were very different people. What would you have liked me to ask you?
We covered an awful lot. I think
we did.
I mean, I think the thing that I always try and get out there to people is, you know, people are always worried about their chances and what are my chances and how do I, you know, game it or do better. And I guess the things that I always try and let people know are, number one, we can't tell you what your chances are. You got to apply and see how it goes. You know, you can look at some stuff and get a general sense of it. But ultimately, if you want a chance, you have to apply.
Right.
So go for it. And if you think there's a lower chance of you getting in, you know that when you apply. But we all know what your chances are when you don't apply. They're zero. Mm-hmm. So if you want a chance, you have to apply. Take the risk. Worst that happens is they tell you no. You can always reapply. So if you want it, if you believe it, put together the best case you can and go for it. Do not hold yourself back. Do not take away an opportunity that has yet to be presented. So I think that's one really important thing.
I sometimes tell people, don't reject yourself. That's their job.
Exactly. Exactly. Job. Go for it. You know, keep your expectations, you know,
realistic,
whatever they are, but create an opportunity. Don't take it off the table before it even could possibly exist. I think the next thing would be, there are a lot of really good schools and you're going to have a great experience and get a lot out of most of them. But there are some schools that you're really, really the experience is going to be unbelievable. And sure, look at a certain set of schools that make sense for you, but don't be so locked into a ranking or this person says this about that, you know, like a parent or a coworker or a publication or whatever. Trust your gut. Like, you know when there's a good match. You know when something feels right. And if you really, really trust your instincts on this, you will find the best place for you. And the only person who can tell you the best place for you is you. And there are sometimes, you know, I talk about dating, like sometimes you meet somebody who look great on paper, but there's no connection. And ultimately, you don't ideally wind up being with that person because there's no connection. It's the same thing with these schools. Some schools look great on paper or the website, and you go visit them, and it's just not what you would hope. It's not what you connect with. And even if the school has a different ranking or whatever, go with the school where you know you're going to, where you just feel in your gut that it's going to be a great experience for you. And if anybody has an issue with that, you know what? They're not the one going. They're not the one going through it. You are. And ultimately, you have to kind of believe in yourself, stand on your own 2 feet, and do what's right for you. You will not regret it. You'll not regret it if you know in your bones that it's right. You will regret not going to a school that you wish you had gone to that felt right. You will regret that. So I would say, you know, be strong and really get to know the schools. I think people spend too much time studying for GMAT and not enough time studying themselves and studying where they'll have a good match. I think that's incredibly important for people. And then the last thing I would say is don't spin your application, reveal yourself. And that's about understanding who you are, what you're about, your strengths, your weaknesses, your passions, your dreams, and tell it to us straight. Tell it to us with passion and conviction. You have to think it through. You have to be self-aware to do that. But there's a reason that you want to go to school. There's something you want to go do. Just tell it to us straight and tell us why. Don't try and like, well, I think that I'd have a better chance if I said this versus your best chance is when you tell us exactly what you want to go do and why. Because after having been in the business over 15 years, read tens of thousands of these things, the essays that stand out, the ones who know themselves, know where they want to go, and are absolutely unashamed, unabashed, and unspinning about why. And it's very authentic, and you can absolutely feel it from them. And those are the most compelling. Those are absolutely the most compelling. You can feel that. You can taste that. You can smell that. You know, however you want to say it, it really rings true. So I guess my short summation would be, if you think you want an MBA, go for it. Don't let anyone say no. If there's a school you want to go to it. Don't let anyone tell you no. And when it comes time to tell us why, don't try and dance around it. So I think those are the things that I would always want to try and get across to people.
Authenticity wins the day.
Yeah, absolutely. At least it's Stern.
Right. Okay, great. Easter, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about NYU Stern's full-time MBA programs, all three of them?
Sure. Definitely our website. We also have a customer service email and phone number. We have an email and phone number of current students if you want to get in touch with them. But as far as I'm concerned, the best thing you can do is come to New York and come visit us in person. And if that's a little challenging, we also go all around the world every fall and come check us out on the road. Ultimately, hopefully, we'll see you in New York City if you have an interest in Stern, and we'd be glad to host you and show you around.
Sounds good. We'll include links in the show notes at accept.com/275 to the NYU Stern full-time program, the KU Tech and Entrepreneurship MBA program, and of course, the Fashion and Luxury Goods MBA program. Check them all out. They're all linked to from accept.com/275. And a quick reminder from our sponsor, 5 Fatal Flaws to Avoid in Your MBA Essays. Download your free copy at accept.com/275download. Listener, thank you too for joining Easter Gallagly and me for our 275th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with admissions directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, or alumni doing great things. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.